You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week. I'm off to New Jersey. I haven't seen my niece and my nephew for about a year and a half, and I'm thrilled to be getting out of town and get to go to my sister's house. And I fully expect to listen to Bruce Springsteen and Bon Jovi on repeat throughout the rest of the week. This episode, I'm so excited about it. It is jam-packed. Believe me, this is one of your favorite episodes, I promise you, because my first guest is attorney Jay Edelson. He is one of the nation's leading plaintiff's lawyers. He has been on my show before because he was the lawyer that filed a federal lawsuit against Tom and Erica Girardi. So he's been watching every episode of the show this season, and I wanted to catch up with him mid-season, which marks this week, to see what he thinks about the episodes thus far and also to get an update on his case. And as you will hear, he says it's very meta to watch the episodes. This week is really the first time that Erica becomes quite emotional about the divorce. And you get to see the other women respond to news, not just about the divorce and what happened in their marriage, but also allegations of fraud. Then I have Kelly Siegler. She's a veteran prosecutor. And believe me, you have seen her if you've ever watched any true crime show. And I know you guys have. Kelly is one of the best prosecutors in the entire country. And one case specifically that you can look up that she was a prosecutor was the case of David Temple in Katy, Texas. So look up that case. She is on this season of Oxygen's Cold Justice, which she helped create. And it follows Kelly and a rotating team of seasoned detectives as they travel to small towns to dig into unsolved homicide cases that have lingered for years without answers or justice. And she's a spitfire and you will crack up. And then Below Deck's former stew, Courtney Skippon, is just as into Love Island on CBS as I am. So I wanted to catch up with her. And she's going to help you understand why you need to watch the show. Now, it is a big commitment. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays on CBS throughout the month into August. And it's worth it because it's basically like Big Brother, but in Hawaii. So you have a bunch of contestants, which are called Islanders. They're living in isolation from the outside world, and they're constantly under video surveillance. So they're not only just making bad decisions when it comes to romance, but you get to see it in action, the way that they're two-faced, the way that they're pretending to be in love with someone just to stay on the show. It's really, really good. And so to survive in the villa, these Islanders must be coupled with another Islander, whether it be for love, friendship, or survival. And the overall winning couple receives a cash prize. And this time, it's more cash than they've ever had in the show's history. So you've got to check it out. It's really good summer watching. So jam-packed episode. We've got Jay Edelson, Kelly Siegler, and Courtney Skippon. So Here we go. Jay Edelson is considered one of the nation's leading plaintiffs' lawyers. He filed a federal lawsuit against Tom and Erica Girardi. I've asked him to come back to discuss this week's episode of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and the status of his case. Welcome back to the show. I love having you on. I can't even imagine how bizarre it must be for you to watch this show. Does it feel very meta to watch it?
Yes, it is. It is kind of like four levels of meta. I remember being in the room when we were typing up the complaint, and we talked about our allegations that it was a sham divorce, and we talked about widows and orphans. And it's just, I've never had the experience of seeing how a defendant reacts in real time. And we can get into whether the reactions were honest or whether she was just doing this for the camera. But a very surreal experience. Our goal wasn't to create any stress. What we think we're going to be able to demonstrate, and I think we've gotten so much great evidence for our case from this show, but the way that I've heard things, and we'll look, you know, with a lot more detail, is that Erica kind of acknowledged that there were significant financial problems. She talked on this week's episode specifically about how she was sued along with Tom over these litigation funding loans and kept asking questions and couldn't get answers, and then filed for divorce really in the dead of night. She didn't even tell him. And so that seems fairly consistent with our theory that she was doing this to protect her assets. And we'll see how that plays out. But our goal isn't to create stress with her. That's not kind of relevant to us either way. But we do want the truth to come out.
So in this episode, it's the first we've really seen of her becoming emotional, and she slightly opens up about her marriage. She explains to Kyle that she was not treated as an equal, which, you know, anybody with two eyeballs could have seen that from the beginning of their relationship. And she has said in a previous episode that it was her choice to leave the marriage, that she essentially dropped him off at work, went home, there was a moving truck, she moved in some furniture, and most, if not a good portion of the contents of her closet, which included luxury clothing, jewelry, and accessories. Do you know if there's any truth to the story that she is telling about the timeline of dropping him off at work, filing in the dead of the night, leaving him gobsmacked about wanting to end their marriage?
We don't know. We haven't had a chance to depose Erica. When you see, you know, we've been involved in kind of celebrity lawsuits where people are in the press a lot, and often what they say to the camera ends up being very different than when they're deposed and they're under oath. But honestly, on this piece, I take her at her word. I have no reason to think that that isn't true, and we'll see what happens.
So we're all watching as viewers, hoping to get more insight into the true story of their marriage, and in turn, who she is, and thus her role, if any, in the fraud committed by Tom and his firm. What is it like for you to watch these episodes, given the suit your firm has filed? Do you have any empathy, or is the evidence so overwhelming that you're kind of watching this with one eyebrow raised?
I'd bet that if you were tracking my thoughts as I was watching, it'd be very different than other people. What I saw on screen was Erica, you know, complaining about this tiny little place she was living in, which had a nice pool and seemed to be a place that a lot of people would love to live in. She was literally popping champagne as she was talking about how horrible this is for her. I didn't hear a single mention about the victims of Tom's fraud. If she actually thought about that, just the optics of popping champagne and hanging out by a pool, and even just doing this whole Real Housewives thing and then complaining about she's got to spend money on lawyers when, you know, Tom and his firm devastated these people. Mm-hmm. They're financially bankrupt. They don't have the luxury of, you know, a glam squad that you know, continues to work on her. So to me, it just seemed like there's a lot of crocodile tears, very upset about her brand, a lot of complaints about Tom, nothing about the actual victims. Not one thing about, hey, is there a way that I could actually help? Which she could do. She could help.
So a lot of people are asking, is it possible that she was aware of something but was too afraid to say or do anything? If she was living silently in this hell of a marriage and he was that aggressive, there were so many people that were afraid of him, that he had so much power, is it possible that she was afraid to say or do anything?
Well, I mean, she filed for divorce and then immediately sought alimony. That doesn't seem like someone who's just super intimidated by Tom. So I don't know what she was thinking internally, but that's not my read of the situation. One thing I actually am glad is coming out is a better sense of who Tom actually is. And we talked about this on prior podcasts. I always viewed him as a very mean-spirited, vindictive person who had little kind of 20 minutes of charm every month, that mm-hmm. that kind of career going on. And I think a lot of people were fooled by that. So the Tom that she's describing is the Tom that I met and knew. Not a nice person, in my view.
For those that are asking whether or not it's possible that she had zero idea about the crimes that he was committing and the firm was committing, is it at all possible?
The theory of our case is that she was a direct beneficiary of the embezzlement, that, you know, that's what fueled her career. It was off the backs of widows and orphans and burn victims who didn't get their money. That is why she was able to star on Broadway and have these music videos and be a real housewife. So, you know, she can say, oh, I didn't know anything. And but she's a savvy person. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it just seemed like she was trying to mount kind of an emotional defense. I didn't take any of that particularly seriously.
So what is the latest on your case? Is there anything that has arisen that is noteworthy?
Yeah. So September 13th and September 14th, there'll be a two-day evidentiary hearing, which is basically a mini trial. We've already gotten a ruling that Tom Girardi was held in contempt. He had a $2 million judgment issued against him and was referred for criminal prosecution. This is now basically a continuation of our original arguments, but now this has to do with whether the firm knew about this too and were involved. So we're seeking contempt orders against two of his partners. It's going to be really interesting because the theory of our case is that they knew about this and they allowed it to happen. And just like Erica, they were making money the whole time off the backs of these victims. One of the most interesting things, and this is why we just have such a great judge. One question is whether Tom is going to be a witness at this mini trial. And they, of course, his lawyer said, oh, he's got Alzheimer's. And the judge remembered what I had said at the beginning of these hearings, where I said, I'm pretty suspicious that he really has Alzheimer's because I've had so many phone calls with him and he was totally lucid. The judge brought that up and said, I understand that another court has suggested maybe he does have Alzheimer's. I want to actually see his medical records because I think that it is potentially in doubt. And that's actually a really big deal. I'm hoping that we're going to be able to put on some testimony about whether he's been faking this or not. And we're also just going to get into the larger story, which is that it's not just about the theft of the Lion Air client's money, but this was kind of how we believe Tom was operating his practice for, you know, a decade.
And most importantly, that it was allowed, that he got away with it. And what that says about the Los Angeles legal marketplace, what it says about people that turned a blind eye and how the system needs to be fixed. So this never happens again.
We still have the California bar has done nothing. And there's a lot they could be doing. And it is, and this isn't a good thing for me to be saying publicly, because the California bar could take action against me if they just think I'm, you know, a rabble rouser. So that's why lawyers generally don't like speaking out against authorities like that. But I'm going to regardless. And there has to be some significant reforms that are done, starting with the California bar, but also, you know, goes to your point of how did he amass so much power with judges and politicians that he was allowed to get away with this kind of one of the worst crime that a lawyer can commit in his capacity as a lawyer.
It really is still astounding to me that given what he had been doing for so many years, that the two of them had agreed to become so public for her to be a cast member on this show. Is it your experience that people that commit these kind of crimes, and I'm speaking about Tom specifically, that they believe themselves to be above the rules, that nothing will ever impact them, and therefore making a decision to put one's life on television and be open to scrutiny doesn't seem like that big of a deal?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think Tom was actually right about that for a long time. The rules didn't apply to him. And I think that his view was that if his wife was on Real Housewives and had this big career, that would kind of increase his fame and increase his power. A lot of times power isn't about how much power someone has. It's about kind of how much power people think that person has.
Right.
So when they become a household name like that, there's extra fear and intimidation that goes along with it. I definitely think that is something that you see all the time. You see it with politicians, you see it with actors and actresses, you see it with these kind of celebrity lawyers where, you know, they're just kind of addicted to fame and they do not think things are going to catch up to them. Look at Michael Avenatti. I mean, mm-hmm. he was literally talking about running for president as he was shaking down Nike. And also, I don't have firsthand knowledge about this, just what I've read in the press, apparently was also taking money from clients and using it for his own uses. Which is crazy. It's crazy that one celebrity lawyer does that. And when you hear a number of them do it, you have to wonder, you know, if our legal system is fully intact.
What did you think about the photo that was released of what seems like Tom on a date?
Well, let me ask your reaction first, then I'll give mine.
I was like, well, who's the ding dong that would want to go out with him? I mean, not only is he not interesting, he is a horrible person.
Yeah. So I mean, I see everything just through the lens of the case. So that's a good point. And, you know, who knows? I would assume that there are people who will date someone just for the story. And that's a great story you can tell. I was out on a date with Tom and this is what he's really like. But no, the lens I see it through is, how is someone who's got supposedly late stage Alzheimer's able to drive a car, set up a date, mm-hmm. go to a restaurant, remember where the car is, all of that feels very consistent with our theory that he is faking this. His lawyer at the last hearing said, Tom can't remember a conversation that we had like the day before. And, you know, you say, really? But he's going on dates with young women? That's interesting.
And then lastly, there was a photo of Erica going on a private jet, obviously on a trip. People have seen her with expensive jewelry on. What do you make of that?
So that, and we're obviously taking a lot of notes about that. We literally have people who are writing down the different handbags she has in her closet.
Wow.
I am aware that it is possible that she is getting luxury goods and going on jets without spending her own money. That's possible. It seems that sounds like a stretch, but we don't know. And we need to do our work in the case to figure it out. She did mention one of the big things that came out, which is going to be very helpful to us, is at the beginning of the case, we got an asset freeze against Tom and her. And what I heard, and I'm going to have to listen to it a couple more times, I heard her acknowledging that she knew about the freeze. And we know that even after the freeze, she was doing things like selling clothes online. I'm pretty sure she was still using her glam squad and spending a ton of money. And that is very, very problematic for her. If I were her lawyer, I'd say, you know, rule number one is don't violate court orders. So we'll see how that plays out. But it's such a bonanza for us getting to watch all of this.
I was going
to
say that. Yeah.
It's just gathering evidence for us, which is very helpful.
And so interesting for the viewer to see this play out because, you know, you were introduced to them and it didn't make sense from the beginning. So for her to say, well, it turns out he's this horrible person and we were never in a marriage of equals, it's like, well, no, duh. But there was this presentation that they were in this happy, happy marriage. So I think it's equally interesting for the viewer, and I can only imagine how interesting it is for those of you that are working behind the scenes to help those victims. And I, again, want to thank you for what you are doing to help those victims. And we must never forget that this is what's most important about this story, is that all of those victims get the money that they so deserve.
No, I appreciate that. That's the goal. And again, Erica, there's a lot Erica could be doing that could help the case and help her as well. If she understood that, and by the way, this issue that, you know, they weren't equals and everything, that there's truth to that, but also she got an incredible amount of money from him to build her career. So it's not like she was some prisoner in the basement of a house where he was giving her like a $50 allowance. I think that, you know, they both were in it for their own reasons. And they both got a ton out of it. But there are things she could be doing right now to help the victims, which also probably would help her too with the case. I think that if I were giving advice to the other defendants, I would say the first thing we've got to do is figure out a way to get all of the victims paid. And I know some people will hear this and think I'm being self-serving. We're doing this pro bono. We're not asking for, we think that the victims have to be paid. We don't want a penny of that money. We've already said that to the court. So this is not self-serving. This is that the right thing has to happen. It matters to us because we care about the judicial system. We care about plaintiff work, but it's also something that's in Erica's best interest too. So I might suggest, you know, put the cork back in the champagne and think about how we can get the victims the money they're owed, because Erica clearly has access to a ton of money.
Thank you so much, Jay. Keep us posted on what the latest is, and I can't wait to circle back with you at the end of the season.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me on. Always love talking to you.
Kelly Siegler is a former Harris County State of Texas prosecutor. She's nicknamed the Giant Killer. She tried 20 death penalty cases and secured the death penalty in 19, tried 68 murder cases, and has never lost. Oxygen's highest rated series, Cold Justice, follows Kelly and a rotating team of seasoned detectives as they travel to small towns to dig into unsolved homicide cases that have lingered for years without answers or justice. And by working alongside local law enforcement across the country, the Cold Justice team has successfully helped bring about 21 convictions and 49 arrests. The show's sixth season premieres July 10th on Oxygen. This fantastic show is done by Magical Elves, whom I love. And I'm thrilled to tell you that I have tracked down Kelly. I'm a huge fan, have been watching her cases for years. This is a real pleasure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to get to talk to you.
You are such a badass. Like, I just love seeing you. I've followed so many of your cases, watching you in court. You do a masterful job. What is it about this line of work makes you so passionate?
Well, thank you for that. You know what? I think it's just really keeping it real, that appreciating that people like honesty and no bullshit and telling it like it is and just being straight with people. And I think that everybody gets it.
Sometimes I wonder, do you think Dick DeGaren has you in his nightmares? Like, do you think he wakes up with one eye open because you are just like the top of your game?
Well, you're probably following the Robert Durst trial, just like I am. And John Lewin is a friend of mine, and he's the prosecutor. And he bought one of those little candles that has my picture on it and gave it to Dick.
Stop it. No
way. Almost gave him a heart attack last week from what I heard.
I believe it. Well, I'm dying to know, what made you transition from prosecuting killers to helping identify them on TV? Because that's a big transition.
It was, and it was something that I never planned for. I had the best job in the world when I was at the DA's office. And in 2008, I decided to run for DA of Harris County, and I lost. So when I lost and found myself unemployed, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. I was pretty depressed for a long time. Mm. And I knew that I'd worked on cold cases for 10 years at the office. And I knew how many of them are out there that are this close to being solved. And I got hooked up on a telephone call one night with Dick Wolf and Tom Thayer and the Magical Elves. And I pitched them the idea of solving cold cases all across the country. I thought it would just maybe be in Texas. Yeah. And they would be beautiful stories too. And I thought we could solve them. And they all loved the idea, the Magical Elves and Dick Wolf. And here we are, 9 years later, still getting to do this. It's just unbelievable, Kate.
Well, if you pitched, I'd be like, sold. I mean, 5 minutes, sold. How in the world do you cull through all of these cases to find the right ones? Because I'm assuming there's just a deluge of people that are desperate to get answers to unsolved cases.
It's so sad. I mean, just this morning before I talked to you, I got 3 new emails from 3 families to look into their cases in different states than here. There are so many of them out there. And there are some where you read and you think, oh my God, this case could be solved if somebody would just focus on it for a little bit of time. I think that what we forget is that in the real world of law enforcement, cops are so busy trying to stay caught up. They don't have time to devote all of their effort and attention to one case at a time to get everything done. So the beautiful thing that we do is we make them work just with us, just on this case during our time there. They can't do anything else because we're getting too much done. And when you're able to do that and you have that luxury, amazing things can happen. And that's a whole lot of the reason for our success.
That makes a ton of sense. Now, before you work on a case, I understand the local law enforcement agency has to invite you.
They do.
So these cases in some circumstances really are career defining for some of those detectives. Is it difficult, or does it seem like it's difficult for some of those detectives to have you partner with them? Because I'm sure there are a lot of egos involved, but if you're, you know, have a picture of somebody up on your desk and you're looking at it every day, and then someone else comes in and says, I'm going to be the person to help you out. Do you ever have to deal with egos that way?
Girl, you just hit the nail on the head, because whenever that night that I pitched this idea to Dick Wolf, I told him that what I'm really scared of is I'm not sure if these cops will want the help because of what you just said, right? That was the main thing I was worried about. And can I tell you, in the whole time we've been doing this, Every single cop that I've talked to just says, Kelly, I just want my case solved.
Oh, wow.
I don't care about that. I just want my case solved. That has been the least of our worries. And it used to be the biggest thing I was worried about, truly. The egos of the cops has not been a problem, not one time.
That's fantastic.
I know.
Who is the hardest to convince of featuring a case? Is it the family, the DA, or the police department?
It's never the family. They are so happy that somebody is doing something on this case. It's sat there for all these years. They just want some attention, some effort, somebody to try. It's never been the family. I can think of one time a family backed out. It's going to be the prosecutor. You know, they're elected officials, they're lawyers. I'm a lawyer. Everybody hates lawyers. You know how it is trying to get them to get on board. We have pretty good success with that, but I think that the biggest complication is going to be the hesitation of the prosecutors.
Is there a difference between the difficulty in finding out the answers to a missing persons case or a murder, or is it just depends on the case?
Well, a missing person case, a lot of times can be someone who just ran away or wanted to go missing or has a mental health problem or has a drug problem. It might not even be a crime. So those are a whole kind of different category. Mm-hmm. I think that murder cases are a lot more criminal law involvement and a lot more legal issues going on with those.
Your team frequently tackles cold cases without DNA evidence. I've been dying to ask you this. And aging witnesses. So instead, you've got to rely on new witness interviews and circumstantial evidence to help point law enforcement to a suspect. Can circumstantial evidence be more important than DNA?
Yes, 1,000 times yes. I wish that people would refocus and reshift and rewind the clock to 20 years ago when we didn't have DNA. And remember that murder cases had to be solved back then too. Hello? We didn't always have DNA. We don't always have a confession. And a circumstantial evidence case can, if someone wants to work a little bit and put a little effort into it, be the most beautiful, magical case there is. Just put a little effort into it and tell a story and don't forget all the little bitty pieces of the story and it can be the best case ever.
Okay, last two questions. I want to know the most gratifying case that you've solved. And then I want to know the episode that your heart explodes for this season, in season 6. So most gratifying case you've ever solved and the episode this season that you're most excited for people to see.
Ooh, I don't know about most gratifying because I can think of so many pictures in my head of the victims' families. That's really a hard one because there's so many and they break your heart and there's so much backstory to all those. That's a hard one to answer. As far as this season, wow, we've had such good luck. You know, we got interrupted by Corona, and so we just got started back to work again. But so far, it's like, ooh, we're going to be spoiling people because the results are so nice. I mean, it takes a while. The criminal justice system moves slowly, as you know, but these cases are going to be good. So we're having really good luck, and I'm excited for everybody to see that.
I worship you. You're so great. Love your show. If anybody loves true crime, this is right up your alley. Kelly is like a badass woman. Nothing better to see on TV. Cold Justice premieres July 10th on Oxygen. Where can everybody find you?
Don't forget the show. The season premiere is tomorrow night at 7 Central Time. First episode. It's here in Texas, right next to me in Stafford in Fort Bend County. We're all excited. I know the boys that work there, so come watch that show. And I'm on Facebook, Kelly Siegler, so check it out. And I hope y'all like everything you see. If you don't, let me know why. We'll try to fix it.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much, Kelly.
All right. Thank you.
Courtney, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so ready after that intro. And I was born ready to talk about this. So happy to be here.
The show is basically watching people in bathing suits and heels walk in circles, pretending to like other people that are all clearly having the same goal. And that is to remain on television for the duration of their lives. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. But I will say, up until last week, I was a Love Island UK purist. Mm. And I feel as though up until recent years, it was different.
Do you think that Love Island UK surpasses USA's version?
The UK one is not great this year. In the past, though, obsessed.
Yeah.
Obsessed with that one. I didn't even watch the US one. Something about it, something about the humor of the UK one is more on par with me. I just fucking love it.
So are you interested in USA's men this season? And they include personal trainers, a UPS driver, a Colombian who presumably wants to be a catalog model. What are you thinking about the men they have chosen thus far for Love Island USA?
I was thinking this last night when they did the, I watched it last night when they did the challenge and they were like, how hot are these men? And I was like, are you out of your mind? Like they look 14.
Yeah. There are a couple women that I think are worthy of their own spinoff shows or TV opportunities. Cachet. Mm-hmm. Her name
absolutely.
Is Cachet Proudfoot. I mean, you need your own television with that name.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
She begins the season by taking off her wig and revealing that she had shaved her head. And so immediately I'm like, she needs to be on a television show of her own because she's too good for the show. And she's continued to be not only hilarious, but amongst all of these cast of characters, I almost think her friendship with Trina is one of the best relationships that the show has to offer because she's a total girl's girl in a situation where you're set up to rip apart the other women.
I am obsessed with Cachet. I feel so protective, passionately obsessed with her. I think she's like so kind, so funny, so normal.
So what's great about this show too, is you see the individual conversations that they have with each other. And in the case of Jeremy and Trina, for example, he's telling her that he sees longevity in their relationship. He's really into her. So Trina goes back and she's like, I'm kind of into him. I think we might have something. But then he goes and talks to the other guys and says, you know, I'm keeping my options open. She gets that. And it reminds me of every relationship that anyone has ever had under the age of 23.
But he's 27.
Like, I know.
I don't understand. But even I don't like, even if not that I've ever done something like that, but if I had, I would go back to my friends and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm out of my mind. I just told this person that I was super into them, that I wanted a relationship. And I don't like, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I told them I wasn't into it. Like, no, you didn't.
I think it's because he wants to play it cool. So none of the other men think that he is targeting the girls that they're pretending to like for at least 24 hours to make it to the next day of filming. So none of them are being honest to one another or to themselves, which makes for fantastic TV. Which of the women
that's true
are your favorites thus far?
I think I only like Cachet. Who else is there? Trina, I'm mad at her. I'm mad at her. Shannon, is that her name? Mm-hmm. The one with Josh, not obsessed. What I'm obsessed with right now is that not only are they not worth really any of their time, but they have known them for like 5 days total. And they are so passionately distressed at the thought of them even speaking to another woman after like 4 days. It's hilarious.
Shannon is from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and reminds me of every person I've ever grown up with. And for that,
really?
For that, I really enjoy her. And the way that she has announced this to everybody at the beginning of the show, I never get jealous. I'm so confident. And then the minute that Amy arrives and she shows Josh some attention, she has a mental breakdown.
She sure does.
Then she comes to the realization approximately 10 hours later that it was a big mistake. And for that, I really love to watch the show. It's the consistent realizations in a short period of time. And I wish that shows like The Bachelor would do that because it would be pretty funny if one of the Bachelor contestants was like, I cannot believe I was just crying about that girl like 3 hours ago, but I got my footing and now I'm going to stay the course. And so that's why Love Island is a little bit more funny. And where are you in the world now?
I'm at home in Vancouver. I wanted to move to Australia. They won't let me in. I don't know when that's going to happen. So I'm having an issue where I was like, we're just going to wait here. We're just going to wait it out until I can come to Australia. Now they're like 2024. And I'm like, oh,
So what's the backup plan until 2024 Australia then?
I don't know. I've like only just reconciled with that truth.
Yeah.
So I'm just like enjoying summer and then we're going to, oh, I don't know. I'm saving for that. So when I am allowed in Australia, then I will be extremely rich and be able to enjoy myself.
And what is the plan to do? What do you want to do in Australia?
I have no idea. I was hoping to figure out when I get there.
Is there a way that we can circumvent the system if we get you as a contestant on The Bachelor Australia?
That I really like The Bachelor Australia.
Yeah.
It's a good one. It's less produced. Maybe mm-hmm. it's more produced, but it's less, I don't know, more edited, less produced.
Is this interview going to come back and haunt us with immigration officials? Because I think that that's your way to go.
I have thought about this, but I don't think they let people in that aren't like citizens. Like they're not going to fly me there from Canada and be like, hello, this is green card. I mean, Courtney.
Stranger things have happened. You never know. Tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me at my house and on Instagram, Twitter. That's it. Courtney Skipon.
A million times. Thank you. And I'll be texting with you about Love Island for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Can't wait. The
amazing Kate Casey. I want to thank my fantastic guests, Jay and Kelly and Courtney, and remind you guys to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review. It's so helpful to Podmetrics, and I'm so grateful if you've already done so. Please do so. Join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. Join us as we talk about this episode, what's going on TV and streaming media this week. My Twitter is at Kate Casey. You can find me tweeting about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. You can see what I'm watching all week and also get access to my must-watch list, which includes basically about 6 to 10 options every week of what to watch on unscripted television. You can find that list at katecasey.substack.com, and you want to join it because you get it in your inbox every Monday. You can find me on Clubhouse and Spotify's Green Room at Kate Casey. TikTok, it's Kate Casey. And my Patreon with bonus episodes is patreon.com/KateCasey. Hoping that you have a fantastic weekend and look forward to catching up with you next week.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.